The discovery was sufficient for Gov Central's English state to fund a follow-up ecological assessment mission. After 3 months classifying Aboriginal plants for edibility and taste, Midsummer came to Norfolk, and the team hit pay dirt. Ione slipped into orbit 375 kilometres above the eccentrically coloured planet and contracted its distortion field until it was only generating a gravity field for the crew toroid and gathering in cosmic energy. The nearby starships were mostly Adamus cargo vessels, big spheres performing slow balletic thermal rolls. With their dump panels extended, they looked bizarrely like cumbersome windmills. Directly ahead of Ione was a large cargo clipper, with the violet and green loops of the Vasilovsky line prominent on its hull. The Voidhawk was still conversing eagerly with its fellows when Syrinx, Reuben, Oxley and Tula took the Ironfield flyer down to Kesteven, one of the larger islands 700 kilometres south of the equator. Its capital was Boston, a trade centre of some 120,000 souls nestling in the intersection of two gentle valleys. The area was heavily forested, and the inhabitants had only thinned the trees out to make room for their houses, almost camouflaging the city from the air. Syrinx could see some parks and several grey church spires rising up above the trees. The city's aerodrome was a broad greensward, set aside a mile and a half, Norfolk refused to use metric measurements, to the north of its winding, leafy boulevards. Oxley brought the craft in from the northwest, careful not to overfly the city itself. Aircraft were banned on Norfolk, except for a small ambulance and flying doctor service, and 90% of its interstellar trade was conducted at Midsummer, which was the only time the planet ever really saw space planes. Consequently, Norfolk's population were a little sensitive to 25-ton objects shooting through the sky over their rooftops. There were over 300 space planes and Ironfield flyers already sitting on the grassy aerodrome when they arrived. Oxley settled 3/4 of a mile from the small cluster of buildings that housed the control tower and aerodrome administration. The airlock stairs unfolded in front of Syrinx, revealing the distant verdant wall of trees, and she saw someone pedalling a bicycle along the long rank of space planes with a dog running alongside. She breathed in, tasting dry, slightly dusty air with a distinct coppery tang of pollen. "The city is larger than I remember," Reuben said, with a mild sense of perplexity jumbled in with his thoughts. "What I saw looked very orderly, quaint almost. I love the way they've incorporated the forest rather than obliterated it." He raised his eyebrows in dismay. "Quaint," he says. "Well, don't tell the natives that." He cleared his throat. "And don't use affinity too much while you're around them. They consider it very impolite." Syrinx eyed the approaching cyclist. It was a boy no more than 14 years old, with a satchel slung over his shoulder. "I'll remember. They are fairly strict Christians, after all, and our facial expressions give us away." "I suppose they do. Does the religious factor affect our chances of getting a cargo?"
"Definitely not. They're English ethnic, far too polite to be prejudiced, at least in public. And while we're on the subject," he broadcast to his three shipmates, "no passes, please. They like to maintain the illusion they have high moral standards. Let them make the running, they invariably do."
"Who, me?" Syrinx asked in mock horror.
Andrew Unwin rode his bicycle up to the group of people standing beside the gleaming purple flyer and braked to a halt, rear wheel squeaking loudly. He had gingerish hair and a sunny face swamped by freckles. His shirt was simple white cotton with buttons down the front and the arms rolled up to his elbows. His green shorts were held up by a thick black leather belt with an ornate brass buckle. There wasn't a modern fabric seal anywhere in sight. He glanced at Syrinx's smart blue ship tunic with its single silver epaulette star and stiffened slightly.
"Captain, ma'am?"
"That's me," she smiled. Andrew Unwin couldn't quite keep his formal attitude going, and the corners of his mouth twitched up towards a grin.
"Aerodrome manager's compliments, Captain, ma'am. He apologizes for not meeting you in person, but we're chocker busy right now."
"Yes, I can see that. It's very kind of him to send you."
"Oh, Dad didn't send me. I'm the acting passport officer," he said proudly, and drew himself up. "Have you got yours, please? I've got my processor block." He dived into his satchel, which excited the dog, who started barking and jumping about.
"Stop it, Mel!" he shouted.